Ask Him a Call.
This is Ask an Attorney, all about Ask Florida law attorney. With attorney Joe Pippin. If you have a legal Ask question, call Joe right now in Tampa. Call 813-287-5700. Just anywhere else, toll free at 877-943-9673. That's 877-943-9673. The law office is open. And now your host, Joe Pippin.
Hey, good morning. Welcome to Ask an Attorney, all about Florida law. I'm attorney Joe Pippin, practicing attorney. The law office is open. And in studio today, attorney Patrick Smith. Good morning, Patrick.
Good morning, Joe.
Patrick has offices with our firm, and his main offices are in Claremont, Leesburg, the Villages. Sorry, I thought I cut my cell phone off. And he also covers Polk County and Lakeland, Davenport, and all the other offices he has access to, of course. And Patrick, welcome to the show.
Joe, thanks for having me. Happy Saturday.
Happy Saturday to you.
Thank you.
And if you're listening on a Sunday night, they replay the Saturday morning broadcast Sunday night at 5 o'clock on 570-910 radio AM out of the St. Pete, Tampa area. If you have a question you'd like to call, it can be just about anything. Patrick and I will tackle that question, do the very best we can at 877-943-9673. That's 877-943-9673. Phone lines are open. Your question can be about wills, trust, probate, guardianship, power of attorneys, can be about family law, can be about personal injury law, can be real estate, landlord-tenant, for example. If you have a question of any type, maybe you don't have a legal question, just have a problem you'd like to discuss with someone, hey, we would be glad to try to help you in any way we can, legal or non-legal. Sometimes I take off my legal hat and just give what I would do answer, and we go like that too. So if you have a legal question, again, 877-943-9673, 877-943-9673. Well, Patrick, did you have any unusual cases this week you worked on?
We had some absolutely fascinating cases this week, and I'm sorry, I was a little distracted. We're getting a question via Instagram, so
All right.
As soon as that comes in, I'll let you know, and we'll take the question. So probably the most interesting question that came in this week was a situation where it's a non-traditional marriage, and by non-traditional, I mean it's a second marriage or a third marriage. In this particular case, it was a second marriage, and there was a home that was used as the homestead property by the married couple, the new married couple. And the husband wanted to move the property into his trust. And he said, I can just sign the quitclaim deed, right? I said, yes, but your spouse will have to join in that conveyance of the property. And he said, well, why does my spouse have to join? Her name's not anywhere on the deed. And you'll look in the record and find tons and tons of deeds in the public record violate this particular provision of state law, because it doesn't live in the statute, it lives in the state constitution, Article 10, Section 4, Subsection C, that says that in the affirmative, you must have spousal joinder to alienate or transfer homestead property. So that deed had to be drafted with the spouse joining in the conveyance to the new husband's trust. So that was kind of an interesting case, because I've seen a lot of deeds done in error of that particular constitutional provision.
Did the new spouse do it?
Yes.
The spouse sign the deed?
Yes, this was a great relationship, but they're not all so amenable, and you're right, that can lead to a lot of controversy.
You know, it used to be our answer to that question would be, well, no, you have to have, if you don't have a premarital agreement, you always ask if they had a premarital agreement in that situation.
Yeah.
And if the answer was no, and then if they didn't also have a postmarital agreement, a lot of times in the past, our solution would have been, well, you got to have a postmarital agreement to waive the rights.
Absolutely.
And under a fairly new statute, maybe a couple of years, that they authorized the wife or husband signing in on the deed, joining the spouse, with just a little magic language in the deed to make sure she understands her legal rights in this situation.
Yeah, and you saw a case out of South Florida called Habib v. Linder, where basically what happened was they had phrasing in there including waiving ereditaments. And the court basically ruled, now this case has been overturned since, but the court ruled no one understands what the term ereditaments mean. How can the spouse be said to have shown a knowing waiver to such a complex term? So burying it in the deed, the waiver of the homestead rights, is not generally accepted as sufficient. They generally want to see exactly what you started with, a prenuptial or a postnuptial agreement.
And, of course, the wife's going to say, I didn't know what I was signing, didn't understand anything in it, and my spouse made me.
Right. And if I can just address the Instagram question, we got, it's a very complex criminal law question. So I'll just answer by saying we will give out our contact information here during the show. Call me at the office, and I will be happy to speak to you off the air about how to proceed with that particular matter.
Yeah, do you know how to spell that word? I'm just kidding.
Eridimus? Be the skills challenge, right?
Let's go to, hey, we have a Patrick. We're going to let Patrick answer Patrick's call from St. Petersburg, whatever it is here.
All right.
Good morning.
Hey, how are y'all doing?
Good morning, Patrick.
What can we do for you, sir?
So I had a question recently. My in-laws live out here in Largo, Florida, and they're kind of recent retirees, and they spent a lot of money getting a contractor to do some remodels on their house, you know, at the house they're retiring in. And he ended up doing a lot of just really, like, shoddy craftsmanship. And just a lot of stuff that, because I grew up around construction, that's just totally not professional work.
Mm-hmm. Was this guy licensed?
He was licensed, yeah, and he was accredited through the Better Business Bureau and everything, too. But I'm just wondering, because he ended up severing ties with them and leaving when they confronted him about it. Is there any legal action that can be taken against somebody like that?
Well, you're going to live and die by the agreement. So was there a signed agreement for the work that was to be done?
There was. There was a contract.
Then I think you start there, Patrick. I think that you get an appointment with an attorney, and if you need a referral to someone who can help you with that sort of kind of particular practice area.
Was the agreed-to contract fee or payment all paid?
No.
So what portion of it was paid?
So I don't know exactly because I didn't sign it, but I know they paid him for a good amount of the work. I think they put out a decent amount of money.
Yeah, what I would normally do is say get another real estate person come in and appraise the situation and give a fee to complete the job. And then give a certified letter, have an attorney perhaps give a certified letter to the old contractor giving him a reasonable time to make the corrections, or otherwise you're going to proceed and not pay him and come after him for the difference.
Okay. Hey, well, thank you guys so much. I appreciate it. That seems like a good place to start.
Yeah, how much money do you think it would... How much money was the total contract for?
I want to say, like, $26,000 or something.
Yeah. Well, we have an attorney in our firm, Jim Lankarski is his name, that does real estate contract dispute things like that. And you know, if you want to call the office, you could ask for Jim, and you could talk to him a little off the air a little bit and see what advice he would give you.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate that.
All right.
Jim Lankarski. Thank you.
Yeah, it's 5'8", you're local, so it's 586-3306. And his extension is 116, so he does works on weekends, which you can leave him a phone message there.
And Patrick, go make our name exceptional today, okay?
Yes, sir. All right.
Have a great day.
All right, again, you're listening to Ask an Attorney All About Florida Law. I'm Attorney Joe Pippin and Attorney Patrick Smith here to help you in any way we can. All you have to do is to call us, 877-943-9673. 877-943-9673. So, Patrick, many, you know, we have clients every week that come in that have put off forever having the will, and they're in their upper 70s, 80s, and they never had a will done. So tell us what happens if someone dies without a will in Florida.
So if you choose to have no plan, what you've chosen to do essentially is allow the state to fill in the gaps for you through the Florida Probate Code. The intestacy provisions will identify heirs from some distant family member, and this often produces, you know, terrible outcomes with people inheriting that you would have never intended. And I had a client consultation that went on for months because this particular client struggled with making a choice. And finally what got through to him was when I said, look, if you don't make a choice, one's already been made for you. And we sort of just walked through the statute and said, if you don't do anything, here's who's going to get your inheritance today.
Yeah.
And so, that motivated him to make a choice.
Yeah, I've had lots of conversations. Well, you know, my spouse died. I don't have any children. I do have an older brother who's not quite with it anymore, and I don't really like his children, and I don't have a will. And I don't want to leave to my brother because he's older than I am, and you know, money might go to the nursing home, and I definitely do not want to leave to his children. So I said, well, guess what? You've never done a document, and you can't make up your mind now who you want to leave your estate to. You've really got a document. It's a statutory document.
Right.
And your brother, who you know, say he's in a nursing home. You know that money's going to be gone pretty quickly, $8,000 or $9,000 bill in a nursing home, and then whatever's left is going to go to his children. You don't want to leave it to. So I mean, you got to do something.
Right, 100% preventable. You just have to draft around it. And we actually just had another Instagram question come in. If you want to take that, it's a question regarding there was a repair job. Now this is interesting. I don't even know the answer to this, so we'll run it by you. So a repair job is done on your home by, I won't say the particular charity, but there's a charity that's well known for doing repair to homes that are damaged in storms. And apparently the work was done incorrectly. So now there's additional damage to the home. What sort of recourse might a person have against a charitable organization that came in and performed substandard work?
Well, if the charity wasn't paid anything and the home was somewhat improved anyway, I would guess. You know, it wasn't done correctly, maybe, but it was improved. I think you'd probably be hard pressed to sue the charity for any monetary damages because the price was improved. That's my first thought.
I think you go after the individual contractor that was working as a sub for the charity.
Yeah, but independent contractors say, "Well, I didn't have any independent relationship with them."
Well, that's a fair point, but I think that's the option to explore as opposed to targeting.
Yeah, you might have to sue the charity. Sue the charity and the independent contractor together. You know, they say sue everybody you can when you're going to sue somebody. That's, and go for the deeper pockets.
Well, you fire off the demand letter first, and maybe everybody will do the right thing and get it resolved.
Yeah, it seems like the charity was going to fix it for them free. They could at least come back and use someone else and fix it for them free, right?
I think that's right. Longer, yeah. I think that's the right thing to do.
Yeah. All right, well, phone lines are open. You're listening to Ask an Attorney All About Florida Law. If you have a legal question or just a problem, you can call our toll-free number, 877-943-9673. You know, if you enhance that question a little bit, was the homeowner going to leave that house to the charity?
Ooh, great question.
When they passed away. And, you know, then you wouldn't probably sue. You wouldn't want to have, the charity would still like to do something to get the house, probably. And that would probably lessen the likelihood of a lawsuit anyway. But who knows? And hey, if you have an opinion on one of our answers and you disagree, we'd love to banter with you a little bit about any legal matter. We like to banter with folks about legal questions sometimes. And
absolutely.
Sometimes it's just a good, healthy exercise to go through. And actually, you can always usually learn something when you do that. Let's go to Dan in Jacksonville.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, sir. I have a revocable living trust dated 2002, and my sisters, who live out of state, 1,000 miles away, we're all now getting up in age, and they've been having some health problems. I have no wife, no ex-wife, no children, no ex-children, no nieces, no nephews, and I only have like an extended family member who's mm-hmm. maybe 41 years old, and they live in another state.
Mm-hmm.
So my concern is, you know, I'm going to have people that can't even handle my estate should I pass. So what options, if any, do I have? Are there companies that can step in and take over as a trustee? And what kind of fees or would they charge?
Yeah, well, I think your choices on trustees would be a corporate trustee like a bank or a brokerage that has a trust department. Patrick and I both serve for people who don't want to use the corporate trustee as the individual trustee. So you could have an attorney trustee, CPA trustee, somebody you know and admire that has a child that's an attorney or CPA, somebody like that you could use that you know as a successor trustee.
Okay.
A lot of our clients will leave a portion of their estate to their church or charity,
mm-hmm.
and they would rather to have an independent person handle the estate just to make sure it's all done properly. And a lot of times, you know, that would be a corporate trustee or our firm. You know, I've had trust in Jacksonville where a person didn't want to use a corporate trustee because you develop a relationship with your client and they would like for you to handle it. And if you have a trust with stretch provisions, like a handicapped person, a person with addiction, or a person who can't handle money, and you want somebody to kind of dole their money out over time, it's really good to have an independent trustee as well. Patrick, you were going to...
Yeah, I think I've walked countless clients through this particular choice, Dan, and we sort of start with the nuclear family. And the ideal choice are the beneficiaries in a lot of circumstances, but that's not always a fit. So then we sort of go to extended family. And certainly in the extended family, if we have a financial advisor, a trust officer, attorney, then we have an embarrassment of riches as far as options. Outside of that, we go to like the circle of friends. So like the good friends in your life, maybe buddies from school that happen to be financially gifted, responsible, level-headed, good with money. And then I think the last tier is sort of that corporate or independent trustee like the attorney. A lot of people like picking the attorney because they're also regulated by the State Bar Association. And in addition to that, especially at our practice, anytime we're selected as the trustee, I always reduce to writing the fact that there are going to be these additional trustees' fees, just in a spirit of transparency. That way, when the beneficiaries learn about these fees, they don't feel like there was some, you know, bait and switch with the parents. They didn't know this fee was going to happen. We have a document showing that was all disclosed. But at the end of the day, a neutral party trustee is optimal in a lot of blended family situations where the sides of the family don't know or trust each other. And as Joe mentioned, with the stretch provisions, independent trustees can often be an optimal approach. But you definitely want to know what those trustees, especially corporate trustees, you want to take a look at their corporate trustee schedule as far as fees before you make that selection.
Okay, so if I set up a meeting with Joe here in Jacksonville at some point to update my trust, that's something you guys can get involved in.
Yeah, we'd be glad to help you.
All right, now in the state of Florida, at one time, I think, when I first set my trust up, they allowed my sisters to be the successor trustees because they were directly related to me, even though they did not live in the state of Florida. Does that still apply?
Well, anybody can be your trustee, basically.
Okay, it doesn't matter what state they live in.
Yeah, the will you're referring to is who is the personal representative of the will. And okay. The personal representative of the will has to be a blood relative or a resident of the state or the spouse of a blood relative. You know, okay. Somebody down your family bloodline can serve no matter where they're located.
Okay. All right. So sounds like I just need to get some time together and get out and see you guys and get this behind me.
All right, Dan. Looking forward to seeing you.
All right. Thank you for your
thank
show.
You.
It's, right. It's very informative.
Thank you. All right. Dan there in Jacksonville is listening to WBOB, which is 600 AM on the dial. There's also an FM station that carries the program there. And I come to Jacksonville every other week. I'll be there this coming weekend and usually see clients on Friday, sometimes during the weekend. So if you want to see Patrick or myself, if you're listening to a local radio station, we probably have offices in that area as well. We have several offices in Polk, Pinellas, Hillsborough County, Manatee, Trinity, Pasco area, Jacksonville, Claremont, Leesburg, the Villages, and you still have an office in Daytona that you use?
Maitland, Apopka.
Okay, there you go. So if you'd like to meet with either one of us, you have a toll-free number, office number now, 1-800-226-3529, and you'll be directed to, you could either make an appointment there or be directed to how you can make an appointment. Let's give out the number. We have Paul waiting. We'll get to you right after I give out the numbers. Paul, 877, number to call the radio station, 877-943-9673. Phone lines are open. Let's go to Paul in Bradenton.
Hello.
Hey, Paul.
Yeah, I have a revocable trust, or my wife and I have a revocable trust, and in it we have our power of attorney set up,
mm-hmm.
and it's set up between... a successor power of attorney for three of our sons.
Okay.
And if the first one listed is unable or unwilling to serve, what paper do we need to so that the second son can?
Well, the first son can resign. Just send a simple little sentence or two saying he hereby resigned as power of attorney in the power of attorney document dated so-and-so. If he's unable to serve, then you get like two doctor's letters that sign one or two sentences that he's unable to handle financial affairs.
Okay. What about if he passes, if the first one passes?
Well, then you just need his death certificate.
Death certificate.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and the letter would be just sent to whom if it were unwilling to serve?
All right, well, so the second one named would show up with the copy of the power of attorney document and a death certificate and present it to where he wants to use it for your benefit.
Okay, and does it matter that the second one is not in the state of Florida?
No, not at all on the power of attorney.
All right, thank you very much.
All right.
Bye.
Patrick, you have anything you want to add to that?
Spot on, Joe. Nothing to make it better.
All right, let's go to Will in Jacksonville. Hey, Will.
Today, sir, how are you? I got a question for you. I was taking care of my father who passed away in a different state, and while I was there, my house caught fire. My wife hired her or got her ex-boyfriend to do it because I couldn't stay. It took like $70 an hour or something for somebody to take care of my dad. He messed up my house worse than it was before the fire. How do I find out what to do about that? Because it's been like this.
Okay, so now your wife's ex-boyfriend was repairing the house. Did I understand that correctly?
Yeah, I got pictures of junk still there. The cabinet fell down.
Was there a contract with this person?
She doesn't have a contract as far as I know, and if she did, she was hiding it.
And this is your ex-wife lives in your home? I'm just trying to get
my wife.
Your wife.
It's the ex-boyfriend. Of the wife.
Okay. Well, okay, she's an owner of the home, too, I take it.
Only because I put a name on it, but other than that...
Yeah, that'll do it.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, if she's an owner, I think she could have who she wants to in the house, and I think she could have who she wants to help fix the house, and without a contract... and without her joining in on the lawsuit, and she's the one that engaged him, does she see the damage and understand the damage, and what does she say about it?
Yeah, she saw all of that. And the crazy thing is I had a contractor that lives two houses from me, and Angie's list was paid at the time. And this guy asked, he said, well, what can I do to help? And she wouldn't even choose the contractor in the neighborhood that helped her out. She went to this guy.
Well, the other contractor was not one of your wife's ex-boyfriends.
The other contractor was not what now?
Well, I'm asking if the other contractor was not one of your wife's ex-boyfriends.
No, he was not. He's a neighbor.
Yeah. Okay. So the question, if I could concisely rephrase your question, can a friend that comes into the house of one of the owners that does damage in the house trying to fix the house could be sued? Is that basically a rephrasing of the...
Yeah, he did more damage than what was done to the house in the fire.
And what would be the total amount of the damages, do you think?
I have no idea, but I know he tore out cabinets that didn't need to be taken out. He changed my bathroom.
Would it be more or less than $5,000?
It's more than $5,000. Easy.
Yeah. Well, I think, what I would recommend you do is to go see a real estate litigation attorney. If you want to call my office, I can tell you how to find one online. And sit down with them and try to figure out whether you can get an attorney to take the case. More than likely, you won't find one to take it on a contingent basis. So more than likely, you're going to have to hand out some more money for an attorney to attempt to find some damages in a case. And, you know, at best, I would give you a 50-50 chance of success would be my answer. Patrick, do you have anything different than that?
I think you're being generous with the 50-50.
Yeah. All right, Will, I hope that helped you.
All right.
All right, thanks for calling. You're listening to Ask an Attorney All About Florida Law. Phone lines are open right now. We're halfway through the show, so if you have a question, please give us a call at 877-943-9673. So, Patrick, a question comes to mind that I'm not sure I know the answer to this either. So, a person who's a part owner of a house has a friend come in and do repair work in a house. Would that friend have to be licensed?
Have to makes it sound like it's compulsory. I think the friend coming in the one fact missing from this set of facts is there's no exchange of money. So I think no. I mean, if the friend's just helping out a friend, I don't think they have to be licensed to do work on a volunteer basis to help a friend out.
I remember my first house in Maryland. My friend across the street came over and helped. And help is a generous word because he did most everything because I'm not gifted in construction matters. And built us a nice big deck on the back of our house.
Sounds beautiful.
Extend it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I paid for all the supplies and everything and took him out to dinner or something, but he never really had any money. And I'm sure he never had a license. And I'm thinking he probably didn't need one because he and I were there together working on it. And I was the owner of the house, so... But I don't know. I'm thinking he wouldn't have needed a license to put a big, expensive deck on the back of my house.
No, I'm thinking if he holds himself out like for a for business purposes mm-hmm. to make money, then you got to have a license. But helping a neighbor, I can't see that alone requiring a license.
I usually think of 50 questions on almost every question I get and whether I've given the right answer and what other answers could have been, and that was just one of the things that popped in my head. All right, let's go to Brenda in Tampa. Hey, Brenda.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Yes, I was calling my neighbor about a year ago. They bought the house next door to us. We live in a residential area, and they bought the house next door to us, and they turned it into an Airbnb. And they actually own two homes on the property because there's a formal house, which has about four bedrooms, and then there's like a little mother-in-law suite. And ever since they've renovated it and everything and opened up the Airbnb a couple of months ago, it's been a constant inflow of people coming to party. They don't know who any of these people are. The neighbors are never on the premise. The owners are never on the premise. And there's been people smoking pot, playing music, keeping lights on all night. We've already called the police, and from what I understand, the city of Tampa, there's really not a lot of restrictions with Airbnb, other than they have to rent it out for a week.
Does your community have any restrictions?
No. So I contacted who the community supervisor was, and that position is no longer filled. The woman gave me a little advice in regards to it, but it seems like we're kind of like we got our hands tied. We can't really do anything other than call the police if there's a disturbance. I just didn't know what else we could do. I've been researching like the laws in the state of Florida, and it seems like the state of Florida is trying to restrict communities from putting restrictions on Airbnbs because they want the tourist dollars.
This is a hot topic because this bill, I don't know, did you read about this, the state Senate bill? The short version is I would reach out to your state senator because this bill has either gone to a vote recently or is on the precipice of going to a vote regarding restriction on residential Airbnbs in like these beachy towns like Indian Rocks Beach. And it's a hot topic because you get a lot of people who buy up, they live there themselves and they buy up residential and turn them into Airbnbs to generate passive income. But then you get people who live there and are residents and don't want to deal with the Airbnb traffic, so to speak. And
yeah,
iron is still very much hot on this. So I would definitely reach out to your state rep and your state senator because your opinion is going to definitely matter, and this is a critical time for it to matter.
Seems to me that someone who rents out their home on a regular basis as a business should have some type of license as well, but I'm not sure that's being regulated yet.
No, they're not. There's no like zoning restrictions. So let's just imagine like if this was a hotel or a motel. Mm-hmm. I mean, you wouldn't put it next to, you know, condominiums. It would be some sort of legal restriction, like you would have a wall, something. We just have a tiny little fence, and it's almost like we're on the property because it's a tight urban space.
Well, it's so like the taxi cab companies being upset about Uber coming in and taking their business, and everything is changing in our world where like Uber drivers with 5 minutes away and you get a quick ride and there's, you know, hundreds of them out there and now people are renting out their homes and without any license on a regular basis.
Valuing the property. I mean, people run outside.
And
they're outside smoking pot.
Yeah. Well, smoking pot, I think you just call the... Yeah. Well, you can do...
You can call the police.
Well, hold on. That could be medicinal.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's another.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And at this point, it's allegedly consuming marijuana. We haven't confirmed it. Everyone's innocent until proven guilty. And I think that it's one of those. You know, we just celebrated Earth Day this last week, mm-hmm. and this is a good example of how that, you know, metaphor kind of mm-hmm. translates to the economy. It's a delicate habitat. Mm-hmm. So hey, if we restrict Airbnbs, that's going to kill a lot of tourists. A lot of these local businesses thrive on tourists being able to visit. If they don't have a place to stay, then, you know, so it's a delicate balance.
Do you know what today is? Okay. Today is Prime Rib Day, I heard. Prime Rib Day, really. I heard an advertisement about Prime Rib Day on the way in here.
And I just got a message on Instagram from a buddy of mine. He's a professional baseball scout. He's currently West Coast. And he said where he is currently, weed's illegal, or weed is legal, marijuana is legal. So there they don't have that issue. I guess that's one way to solve the problem. If you legalize mm-hmm. the illegal things, they're no longer a problem. So.
Right.
Probably the best advice you're going to get is to contact your state senator and see if what he can help you with.
I think that's the right answer. Yes.
So I don't think we have an answer.
You don't really have any
community. Well, keep calling the police because you have a right to the quiet enjoyment of your property. So call the police as much as you can when there's a disturbance in the community. Anything you see that, you know, looks like a crime going on, you can call the police as well. And call your state senator. And other than that, I don't think we have any great answer for you.
Your hands are tied because it's devaluing your property.
Exactly. You
know? And it would be difficult, like, if I'm going to try to sell it. Or even if I rent it out later, my house, it would put that burden on those renters. You know, they would be dealing with that influx of people.
Well, here's how I would look at it from a silver lining perspective. I'm a gregarious person. I like meeting new people. So if I had a neighbor who had an Airbnb, I would take every opportunity I could to meet the new Airbnb people just because I think that's a great opportunity to get, like, because you're going to have people from all over the world staying at that house. So, I mean, I don't know if that helps you at all. I know it's a headache when you have to deal with the sort of rough and tumble crowd that's going to stay there. But and I would just say try to focus on the positives. Like, you could get a sampler of the world's culture staying at that house and just try to focus on that and make it as positive as possible.
Patrick, what about her getting a boombox and put a sound...
Well, I could be the one that...
And play 60s music real loud and point it in their direction. How would that work?
I think, you know, there's a wonderful movie called Step Brothers
mm-hmm.
where they put on a parade of examples of how to deal with people you don't want moving into the neighborhood. I won't cite them at this particular moment, but I would refer to the movie. So there are some wonderful options out there.
What do you think of that one, putting a boombox and playing 60s music?
Well, we thought of that.
You forget, these people are...
You thought of that?
we thought of it, and it's kind of like, you know, we really just wanted to have our neighbors sell the place or have a long-term rental, something that's going to be more, you know, we would actually know the people. You don't know who these people are. You don't know if they have a weapon.
But I think you're throwing gasoline on the spark if you do that. You're playing 60s music to people smoking marijuana. Like, that's just fanning the flame.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you would have to pay something that would be more... Like, you need to play, like, some Slayer or something that's going to be repugnant to those consuming marijuana. But 60s music, you're right in their wheelhouse.
That's not legal advice, though, I must say. So.
Yeah. Well, it's not illegal advice. So.
Well, all right, Brenda.
It's a troubling situation, and I'm looking long-term in terms of the evaluation and... You know, and eventually those people that are being obnoxious are coming here to go party and do that. You know, they're going to cause trouble in the house, too. So I'm assuming there's going to be home damage.
Do you have a homeowners association?
Yes, we do. We do. And I'm very actively involved in it. And I've spoken with the president of our HOA, and he's hesitant to write a letter to the people because I have no problem myself, me and my neighbors that share that property space that's right next to it. Writing a letter.
Well, I would hire a homeowners association attorney to see if y'all can develop, the board and the community can vote on developing some new rules for the community.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not sure. I don't practice in that area, so I'm not sure that's great advice, but I think if it were me, I'd at least explore it.
Yeah, and I'm contacting my city councilman.
So. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and good.
I don't know how effective he is, but...
Well, keep searching for somebody to help you. The city councilman would also be a good choice.
And call us back. Keep us posted as things progress. You know,
Definitely.
A lot of times.
And if we gave you any good advice there that you use and find successful, call us back and let us know.
Yeah, I think most of that advice is just going to go up in smoke.
Yeah.
But I hear it's just a growing issue around Florida where you have communities where Depending, but then other people have invested their money and they're living in a nice area, which this is a nice area.
Yeah, see, I don't know why the city council can't adopt some rules that people like that have to be licensed and pay a certain tax, like a hotel tax type of thing, or rental.
And also have approval by the community. I would say, if you're opening up an Airbnb in your community, you need the approval of the majority of people in your community to agree to that. That would be a fair standard.
So, all right, Brenda.
Thank you so much.
All right, thank you. All right. All right, we have about 15 minutes left in the show. If you have a legal question, you have a toll-free number, 877-943-9673, 877-943-9673. Phone lines are open. If you have a legal question, I'd be more than glad to help you. If you'd like to contact our office, you have a toll-free number, 1-800-226-3529. Go to extension 200. If you'd like our free estate planning poster sheet, you just call in and we'd be glad to mail it to you. It's a double-sided sheet all about estate planning. And if you'd like that, it's 1-800-226-3529. Patrick, why don't you give your primary contact number?
So the primary office line, 352-241-8760. You can always email me, patricksmith@attypip.com on Facebook, Attorney Patrick Smith on Instagram, @AttorneyPatrickSmith, and to text 386-334-9970.
By the way, today's show is being streamed as we speak here on Facebook Live on the Ask an Attorney page. Also, it's being streamed live on WeBeamTV.com. Also, the station, and we put the show on a YouTube channel that we developed, Ask an Attorney, every week, so a bunch of shows there. If you have an iPhone, we have an Ask an Attorney app with a collection of shows that are there. So you have multiple ways to listen or re-listen, and if you call in for a friend or something, there's a way you can reconnect to the show. And the phone lines are open right now. We have 12 minutes left in the show. If you have a question, give us a call at 877-943-9673. 877-943-9673. Hey, if you're upset about something going on in your community, like that last caller, the best way to do is to get active with the state, the governor, the senator, your House representative, your city council, and see what they can do to implement some new regulations that are become law, basically, and get active in the community. And the best way to make change is to be active and not just be passive and complain about it, right?
Couldn't agree more.
All right.
We have an Instagram question. Do we have a call?
No, go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Well, it's a question about me, and the question is, do I even do my hair in the morning, or am I just blessed? And I will save this because you do not believe that question just came in. I literally just wash it and I air dry it. Like, there's nothing special. I don't use any product or anything, despite... I know that actually was a debate that broke out on the Instagram live feed one day. There's no product. It's just...
All right. Well, that's great.
All natural.
Great information.
Hard-hitting legal information right there for you Saturday mornings.
So you gave your wife a list of things to send you on Instagram to post this morning?
I assure you, my wife is tucked, snugged into bed as we speak. So,
all right, let's go to Tom calling. Tom, where are you calling from?
Fruit Cove, Florida.
Fruit Cove?
Fruit Cove, yeah, Florida.
What city is that close to?
Well, that's in, I don't know if you know where, St. John's, Florida.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So what can we do for you?
Well, my question is, I've got some I-bonds, TIPS they call them. How do you transfer those into a trust?
Oh, the hardest thing to put in a trust are the bonds.
Yep.
Generally, what you do you have a financial advisor there in Jacksonville?
Not at this time.
And where did you buy the bonds from?
Bought them from a bank.
Is the bank still selling bonds?
No.
All right, so basically what we tell people they have to do is usually we try to get you to the financial planner where you bought them and see if they can help you transfer them is the easiest thing to do. sometimes the easier, what's left, I think, is to send them certified mail back to the Federal Reserve, who will reissue them in the name of the trust with your instructions. Patrick, what do you tell?
No, you know, it's funny you mention that, because remember the one of our early offices down in Haines City. Remember there was a gentleman in Bruce's office who used to do
Ted.
Ted. That was all Ted did was...
he started a business helping people do bonds.
Because it was that big of a deal that he was able to start this little kind of niche practice area, and it was outrageously successful.
Ted passed away. I don't know if you knew that or not.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
But you might have to package them up. What's the value? I don't hate to be nosy here, but what's the value of the bonds?
Probably about 80.
80,000?
Yeah.
Some people slowly cash, have a program of slowly cashing them in to not to, you know, cash in enough every year not to make it a tax situation, a tax problem, just to get rid of them.
Yeah, they pay such good interest. I got them like in 2000, and they're kicking butt.
What's the term of the bonds?
They're 30 years, and I've probably got 12 more years left on them.
Yeah, well, you might want to package those up and send them back to the Federal Reserve. And you can go online and get forms and so forth to send along with them and have them reissued.
Yeah, and my understanding is they don't reissue bonds anymore. They keep everything online.
Yeah, it's going to get electronic ownership, basically, yes.
I would just have you get with Joe and get with a good financial advisor, and that'll really not only... Because the financial advisor is not only going to help you here on this particular bonds issue, but it's going to help you kind of with your overall plan. And down the road, you know, flash forward many years, when you've passed, if you have a good financial advisor you're working with that your family's familiar with, when the kids or the family reach out to someone upon your passing, it's going to give them a lot of peace of mind to know this was dad's guy or gal that they worked with. So it's more than just the bonds issue. You want to make sure you have a good FA to work with that's going to be able to service your entire family.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Hey, Tom, are you close to Green Cove Springs?
Is that... no, that's across the river from me.
Across the river, okay. I was just trying to place where you were. I'll look on a map and figure it out.
Gillington Creek area. That would be another, if you're familiar with Gillington Creek.
Yes. Okay. Very good. Thanks.
Thanks for calling, Tom.
Let's go to Tammy in Lakeland. Hey, Tammy.
Hey, how are you?
Good. So what can we do for you?
Well, I just had a quick question. My daughters were in an accident in 16. The young man was driving, you know, erratically.
Yeah, 2016?
Yes. And he hit them and rolled the car three times, left the scene.
Oh, my gosh.
Long story short, we went to court, asked that he not go to jail because he was only 18, that he only pay restitution on our deductible for our health insurance and our car insurance. So the young man paid for very few months, and then he opted to go to prison for 136 days so that he didn't have to pay the rest of the restitution, which was a little under $5,000. I would like this young man to pay, and I've researched some, and it appears that it's probably going to cost me a little bit more to force him to pay, if I'm even able to do that, than it would be just to forget it.
How much does he still owe you?
He has about $4,300.
Well, they have a small... I'm not sure about the statute of limitations on that case, but if you could sue him and go to small claims court, you can do it yourself. You don't have to pay an attorney for under claims under $5,000. And then what you'd walk away with at the end of the day would be a judgment that he owes you money, and that judgment can be renewed, I think. It used to be judgments would be good for 20 years. I'm not sure if it's 7 years or 20 years now. It can be renewed. But
I think it's 7 and it can be extended.
Yeah. So you could get a judgment. So sooner or later he has some money. You can go after it and get paid. And there is an interest rate, which is pretty high on a statutory lien.
Well, I could be mistaken, but I think we have a judgment against him. I believe the court issued that, but I don't know how to enforce that.
The court would have only issued the state making him make restitution is not exactly the same as a judgment.
Okay.
And the state making him restitution, it sounds like that was waived off when he served his prison time.
Okay.
And that restitution may or may not still be required, but you'd only have to enforce that through the criminal system, whereas if you get a judgment, that would be a civil case, and that would be a judgment that you can get, and then you can personally go after his funds. So you got to figure out exactly what you have. I have an attorney that could probably, and he's not with the firm, but he could probably look into that and see if the restitution is still required or not. If you want to contact my office, I'll give you his name.
Certainly. That'd be great.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Enjoy your program.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right, let's go to Dorothy in Zephyr Hills.
Morning.
Hey, Dorothy.
Yes, I have, I'm a resident of Michigan, and I live in an independent community, which is rental. I sold my property I have there. I still have, I come to Florida here about 4 months a year, and I have property here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if I have a will, does attorney from both states come into play on that, or what?
No, your last will is your last will. We have an attorney in an office in Zephyr Hills. His name is Dennis Moses. He would be glad to look at your will for no charge and advise you whether it needs to be tweaked or not. The most common things of the out-of-state wills are the first sentence of the will says you're a resident of Michigan. The second thing is it may or may not be witnessed properly to fit the self-proving laws in Florida, which means if you had a Michigan will and died, you might have to go find the witness to the will a long time ago. In Florida, it would be we would do what's called a self-proving will to where you don't have to find or locate the witnesses.
I don't understand. Can you talk just a little bit slower? I'm sorry.
No, you. We have an office in Zephyr Hills and an attorney that would review your document for no charge and advise you whether or not you need to update it. So our toll-free office number, if you want to write...
Otherwise, I would have to come in. There would be attorneys from both that would come.
No, your last will is your last will. Florida may accept the will, but it really needs to be reviewed, even though it's drafted in Michigan. And you might have to find...
Even though I own property here.
Yeah, your will just says all my real and personal property, so it covers property everywhere.
Okay.
All right, so I'm going to...
I was told that unless I disposed of it here, that attorneys from both states would come in.
No, only if you own real estate in Michigan.
I think you may be confused because you are going to go through two probates. So you're going to go through a primary probate in the state of your residency, and if you own property in another state...
No, I have a trust. I have a trust.
Okay. Then in that case, you just need to make sure all the real properties adequately funded into the trust, and then the will is just going to be there to serve as a pour over, which will be to catch anything you didn't put in the trust. But if everything's in the trust, then it will bypass probate.
Normally what we do for someone who comes in for another state, we review the will, we do an amendment, sometimes a restatement yep. to the will to say it's Florida, regulated by Florida law, and usually do a new will, a new Florida will that ties in with your amended Florida trust.
Well, I'd have to have a new Florida will in addition to the one.
Well,
I have
ma'am, I said really an attorney needs to review it to advise you whether or not it's okay in Florida or it needs to be tweaked or updated.
Right. Now, what does that run to review that?
It doesn't cost anything to review it, and we have an office in Zephyr Hills.
Okay, could you give me the phone number, please?
1-800-226-3529.
3529, okay. 1-800-226-3529.
You got it.
Who was the person giving you this advice regarding attorneys coming in from two different states?
The attorney in Michigan.
Okay.
All right.
He said I should dispose of the property here, and I didn't want to do that.
Well, I don't understand why he would say that, but that you can tell the attorney that when you meet all about that discussion, because my time on the show is up now. So,
sure. All right,
Dorothy. Thank you. All right. So, how much time we have? A minute. So we have 30 seconds. Okay. So we have a show about lost luggage. Well, that'll have to wait till next time, I guess.
Okay,
so.
Great.
If you want to call our office, you have a toll-free number, 1-800-226-3529. 1-800-226-3529. Patrick, your phone number real quick.
352-241-8760.
All right, thank you for listening. You're Asking an Attorney, all about Florida law. We're here every week trying to help as many people as we can. You have a great weekend. So long.